Board.
Thank you, Naomi. Thanks, everyone, for coming. I appreciate the JTS hosting me. And I thank the Jewish Publication Society for publishing my book. As you heard, I'm an MBA. I don't have a degree in Judaic studies or Jewish history or anything like that. So it's sometimes hard to sort of break into another field when no one thinks you have the credentials to do that field. So I really am grateful that someone saw the book for what it was and the research done behind it and said, okay, I don't care if it's an MBA in finance, we can publish it and host it at the JTS. So I appreciate that. The topic tonight is really ugly. It's not a nice topic. No one's going to come out of here feeling good. My wife doesn't read the book. If I show her a postcard, she's like, don't show it to me. I know it's interesting. I can't see it. I don't want to look at it. It's an unfortunate topic. It's an obscure topic, but it's still pretty relevant today, which is why the JPS published it and why it's gotten some pretty good buzz. So I'll go through it. So the first on the cover, you can see postcard from Hungary from about 1925 that shows a Jewish snake taking over the world with the word insatiable. So that's just a brief example. So I'm going to go through a little bit about the history of postcards and why it's important. So bear with me for about, I don't know, the first third, and then I'll get into a lot of the images. So first, on the history of the postcard, it's an obscure topic. No one really uses postcards today. But in the 1880s, when postcards started being used through World War I, 1920s, postcards were used in enormous numbers. There was mail twice a day. There was no telephone. And that's really how people communicated. Other than seeing people live, they sent postcards. So for an example, in Great Britain, there were 5 billion postcards. There were 2 billion postcards mailed in 1906. So 50 for every person in the nation, including children, 50 postcards a year. So during those years, there were billions and billions of postcards. So over a 30-year period, there may be 150 billion postcards that were printed and mailed, and a lot of them still survive. And then after World War I, it just wasn't in use that much. There still were postcards, but with the telephone and newspapers and other technologies, it wasn't used as much anymore. And today, no one uses them. But at the time, since it was really the only photographic way to show an image, the postcard showed everything: war, villages, comics, any topic imaginable, natural disasters, transportation, politics, and then anti-Semitism. So I'm just going to show a few postcards just to get a feel, just a couple. This is one of the first postcards. It's from about 1890 from Paris, showing the Eiffel Tower, just to give you a quick feel. This is a postcard showing the ruins of an earthquake in Messina, Italy in 1908. So there are a lot of disasters are only photographed. You can only find the images of them on postcards. So from this earthquake, there must be thousands of images of just damage, just ruins. That's the only way people saw them. This is one from Harvard. This is from 1898. So every organization, every city, every town created postcards. This is one of the Wright brothers airplane that made its show around the country in 1910. So this is an actual photograph that was converted into a postcard. Okay, so why postcards? Why anti-Semitism? Why did I do this? The reason I like history. If I wasn't doing business, I'd be doing history. I'd be poor. So I did business, but I like history. So I like to collect. So I collected what interested me with these historical images. And I noticed that there's this disturbing topic called anti-Semitism that's on these postcards. And it still is relevant today, and you sort of see these images and know about these images. So it intrigued me. And while I'm not an expert on anti-Semitism, I started to do a little research on it. And I noticed that no one's really covering these postcards. Like, no one's really written about it. I found a book in German about some exhibit and in France, but there was no English book at all about this topic. And these postcards were used by the billions, anti-Semitic images. You know, why hasn't anyone done anything about this? So that's why I did it. You know, one of the reasons I think they're important is because it's tangible evidence. You can see the postcard, it's real. A lot of them were mailed, so you can see the stamp on the back and the postmark and the message. It's real evidence. And in an era where people try to deny the Holocaust or that there were no Jews in Jerusalem, it's good to have tangible evidence of things. I'm keeping these postcards, and eventually they'll be passed on to someone else at some point in time. The postcards that you'll see here, and this is very important, are from the 1890s to around the 1920s. So this is before the Holocaust started. And that's really the focus of the book, is that these postcards are really a foreshadowing of what ended up happening in Europe. And it's sort of curious how it didn't get more noticed. So why are they important for anti-Semitism? And as I was going through it, how do we usually know about anti-Semitism? We know about Hitler, we know about Martin Luther, we know about newspapers, we know about pogroms and the Holocaust, we know about blood libels. These are all like headline events. They're all political leaders and thought leaders and politicians and professors and newspaper editors and rabble-rousers. That's really how we, if you do a study of anti-Semitism, that's really what you're going to see. All these major events and leaders and books that were written about people hating Jews and that kind of thing. But what we usually don't get any insight to is what regular people thought. What did the average middle class, lower class, working class person on the street who was not an editor of a newspaper, who was not the mayor of a town, who was not a professor at a university, what did they think? What were they thinking? What did they think about Jews? And that's what you don't see in all the research. And then you get to the postcard and you see, wow, this is a really interesting way to sort of get a window into what regular people were doing. Because to mail a postcard, you go to the store, you buy the postcard, you buy the stamp, you put the stamp on it, you write a message, and you mail it to someone, and that person gets the postcard, looks at the image. It's a very proactive act. You're not just, you know, buying a newspaper and, oh yeah, it's an anti-Semitic article. It's a very active act. So it's a really good window into what regular people were doing. So sort of my kind of a catch line is that in a sense, the postcards, the anti-Semitism on postcards is more chilling to me than some of these other forms, because it's really part of day-to-day activity. It happened millions of times a year because these billions of postcards were mailed. The mail system used them, the postal system, it was government-run postal system. People collected these postcards, that's why they still survive today. So in my mind, these postcards kind of prove that anti-Semitism was really part of the daily culture. It wasn't just Hitler, it wasn't just Karl Luger, the mayor of Vienna, it wasn't just Martin Luther writing against Jews. It was everyday people. They were talking about it, they were thinking about it, as casual as the yesterday's baseball game. So that's kind of chilling to think about. So who published anti-Semitic postcards? You know, no surprise, Germany. They were the number one leader in the postcards, and we'll see that they were the worst ones. And then really the countries where there were Jews: France, Austria and Hungary, Russia, Ukraine, Great Britain, United States, Poland, Czechoslovakia. Typically the countries without Jews didn't really publish postcards. So you'll see a few from South America, but it wasn't really a Jewish place in the 1890s compared to Europe and Asia. There weren't really any Jews. So you don't really see anti-Semitic postcards. And today, No one's publishing anti-Semitic postcards except for the Muslim world, which is no surprise. The difference is they already got rid of their Jews, but they're still publishing them. So, and then so that the thesis of the postcards as sort of a way to see what regular people were thinking is one thing that we learned. And then as I was going through the postcards, you can learn another thing about these postcards is that you can test the virulence of anti-Semitism in a country by how virulent the postcards were. So Germany was the number one hater of Jews, and lo and behold, their postcards were their worst. They portrayed Jews and what they thought Jews should happen to Jews the worst. And Hungary was a country that's was allied with Germany, and they were their postcards are pretty bad also. And then France is kind of number two. You can really see a feel after going through many, many examples that France, it's a little less virulent, but still pretty bad. And then Great Britain, it's already sort of a little bit toned down. It's more about Jews not being trustworthy and money hungry. And then you get to the United States, where there were still many anti-Semitic postcards, but it was a little bit more benign. It was really Jews love money and they have big noses. But this idea that we should expel them or do something to them really wasn't reflected in the United States postcards. So we really have this sort of litmus test for these anti-Semitic postcards where we can find out how bad anti-Semitism was at in a country in 1900 just by looking at postcards. So soon I'll get into the postcards. But before I go country by country, the one thing that you'll see on all postcards from all the countries is that dehumanization of the Jew was the key, was a common theme. So basically, the way the Jew was portrayed was really just ugly and warped. Large noses, misshapen bodies. Somehow they had this thing with hands being large, the feet being flat and large, fat lips, bowed legs. And really, doing research, and they had to, by dehumanizing the Jew, it's easier to, you know, from the German perspective, they're not human, they're subhuman. And that makes it easier to do bad things to them. You know, as I was doing the research, it was really Hank Greenberg, the baseball player, and Bess Meyerson, Miss America, that sort of changed the perception that, oh yeah, Jews aren't really necessarily ugly and misshapen, they can win Miss America contests. And that only until then really changed the perception in this country. So now I'll start showing some postcards. So just in the theme of dehumanization, so this is a postcard, this is an American postcard from about 1900, and again, I'm not going to say the date on all of them, they're all from about 1898 to about 1915, almost all the examples. So this is just a simple, not very virulent, you know, the Yiddish word for well, vel, who knows, kind of a play on words showing a Jewish person with a large nose. And this is a postcard. This one is from also the United States. And this is showing sort of a different version of, you know, again, the Jew with the diamond here, and, you know, the warped lips and the large nose and the hands and the whole imagery. You can sort of, as you go through them, you'll see these themes repeated. This is a French postcard of a image of a person named Levi Abraham. You can see the name there with horns, and I won't go through the French translation, but it talks about how his horns are being used for a hat rack. So the whole image of a Jew with horns, there's a whole history behind that. And here's a German postcard, and on the far right you can see a Jew, they're all waiting for the bathroom on the left, and the Jew on the right can't hold it in and defecates in his pants next to the dog there. I blew it up a little bit so you can see sort of, you know, the deformed shape and just the legs and the dress. It's just sort of this awkward, very ugly appearance. This is another German postcard. of a Jew named Hirsch getting a bath, sort of with this childish look, kind of fat and ugly, and he's being washed by a non-Jew who looks handsome and stout. Then Germany takes a little further. Here's the caption says, "From the vulture to the mire." So a little bit harsher of an image. And here's another German postcard of the family Lowy, which means lion in German. And you can see the family of Jews with lion bodies, with children eating a bone. This is pretty disgusting image. And one more. This is also from Germany. This is a Jews in a zoo. And on the top it has the names Lowy and Bar for bear and wolf and Hirsch for deer. And you can see that the faces of the animals have Jew images. I blew up one of the lion. So that's the dehumanization. I'm going to now run through the countries, and I'm going to do it in the book has it in most virulent to least. I'm going to go the reverse. I'm going to start from the U.S. So the U.S. themes, there were really two themes. One, that Jews love money and Jews have large noses. That's what the U.S. anti-Semitic postcards are. And again, this is from about 1905, this postcard. So you can see the ugly, again, look at the image, the ugly Jewish woman with, you know, the warts and the big nose and the Yiddish, you know, why not, with the money. And then a lot of U.S. postcards harped on this concept of the Jewish pawnbroker over and over again. So this is the pawnbroker I. Cohen taking advantage of the innocent, poor Gentile. And you could always tell them, they always drew their noses small, so you could always see who was playing which role. And now, here and there, I always found it interesting to look at the message. So the reverse of this postcard is this image. So this postcard was mailed, and this is the message that was written. "I'm feeling fine and dandy, will write a letter later, had some rain last night, Norm." So it's about it was less than 140 characters, so it's like a Twitter message, it went public today. So the way I put it, this is really like the Twitter message of 1911, sent on an anti-Semitic card, a little image. So you can see, it wasn't even referred to. It was casual. No, this person didn't really care. It didn't really cross their mind that they were doing anything that was unique by sending an anti-Semitic card. Again, another one, such a business. You can see they made fun of the Yiddish sound and the sort of childish looking Jew with the big nose. Now, one other U.S. theme that we all kind of know about but we forget about is that in the U.S. there was a lot of exclusion. So Jews were excluded from hotels and jobs and what else? Schools. So it was a big part of life that I you know, most of us don't remember. Maybe some of you do. So this is a postcard from some unknown little vacation cottage up in New York, Tannersville, New York, and you can very see on the bottom what their advertisement postcard said: "No Jews taken." So this is a very innocent looking postcard from, this is from actually a little later, this one's from about the 1940s. So this is a postcard from a hotel in Miami Beach, Florida, the Marine Terrace Hotel. Now let's look on the other side. What does it say? What's the first thing they advertise? Gentile clientele. This postcard's also, it's a little hard to see what's going on here. Anyone here from Queens? From Douglaston? So Douglaston, a lot of these towns were founded in the early, like 1908, 1909, 10, 11. They were selling lots and they were building the Long Island Railroad. And when they sold these lots, they said that Jews couldn't buy these lots and blacks. So you can see the first thing they advertised, 2,500 restricted lots. And the same thing with Hollis Terrace. The first thing they advertise are restricted lots. And if you go through the history of all these places, they were all restricted. And it took court cases to open them up. So in a sense, these postcards are evidence that the history of the growth of Queens and Long Island and the Long Island Railroad is tinged with anti-Semitism. So now we'll take it up a notch a little bit, and we'll go to the British postcards. And the themes here are a little bit harsher, a lot of the same themes, but you know, the Jews are outside society, they're sort of taking our money a little bit. So I'll let you read that caption for a second. So this one is also, this is about 1908. So you'll see these themes that, you know, society is going on and they're fixing, going to put the fire out, and the Jewish person is sort of ungrateful and selfish. And here there's another good example of the other side. So this is the message. Dear Ethel, thank you for the PB. I don't know what that is. Hope you are a good girl. The school board has been after you today. May Baycook has been to see me tonight. She does miss you. So do I. With love to all. From Mama, your garden is looking A1. So this is Mama writing to her child about the school board and I miss you and your garden. So one wonders, what was Mama thinking and what was Ethel thinking when she got this postcard? And the answer is they probably weren't thinking anything. This was like sending an image of, I don't know, the town church. It didn't cross their mind that they were doing anything certainly wrong, but anything unique by sending an anti-Semitic postcard. And then another British postcard. You can see Cohen on the top and Christians awake. You know, beware of the Jews. We better watch out. You can read that one. Similar themes. The Jews' love for money and making fun of the Yiddish speak.
You really can't read them.
You can't read them? Okay. So it says, Mr. Eiselbaum, I love your Rebecca already, yet will you give her to me? The son asks the girl's father, and the father says, give her to you. Do you want to ruin me? I never give nothings away. So saying that you can't marry my daughter, I don't give her away, you have to pay me. And now we'll go a little bit further, and we'll talk about the French postcards. And there's a whole chapter in the book about the Dreyfus Affair, because a lot of the posts, this was in the 1890s, and a lot of anti-Semitic postcards started with the Dreyfus Affair. So without going through the whole event, a lot of you probably know a French officer was basically accused and convicted of being a spy without any evidence, just because he was Jewish. So I found this one ironic, because they put on Dreyfus a German army helmet, as if the Jews were in league with Germany. And here a little bit more a little bit more virulent here. We're already talking about this. The caption says the new wandering Jew, and here's a Jew stepping on banks. One bank is titled the Bank of Berlin. One is titled the Bank of Paris. Holding money bags, stepping on the banks. Already this concept of Jewish control of the levers of power. And this one is also takes it up a notch a little bit more. Here is the Jews are the enemy. So on the left you see these characters, these sort of mythic French characters pointing to the Jewish demon on the right, saying that the Jews are the enemy. I blew up the image of the Jewish demon here. So you can see the word Talmud and the Jewish king there, and he's sort of tearing up the land. So now we'll take it to Germany. So you've already seen a preview, but here it's, you know, go back to the U.S. ones. You had Jews with some big noses and they love money, it's a business. But they didn't show Jews the way I just showed them to you. And neither did Great Britain. But Germany here is already the Jewish spider demon taking the money. And here is a German postcard. It's a family of Jews that are stuck on a bridge between some kind of evil jester and a dog, and the caption says, neither here, neither there. So it basically alludes to this sort of ghetto idea that they didn't want the Jews anywhere. And this is an interesting postcard from Germany. It just kind of shows the ingrained hatred. I'm showing the back of the postcard because the front of this postcard has nothing anti-Semitic about it. I think it was just an image of some building. But the person who bought this postcard and decided to mail it bought a sticker. And he pasted that sticker on the upper left of that postcard. And that sticker is a quote by, I'm going to say it wrong, Goethe, who says, you know, the quote says, the Israelite nation has never been worth much, as it has been 1,000 times reproached by its leaders, judges, principal, men, and prophets. It possesses few of the virtues and most of the flaws of other nations. So this is really good evidence that this person who bought this postcard wasn't just, he was really thinking about it. I want to buy this sticker that has an anti-Semitic message. I'm going to paste it on this postcard and mail it. Then we go to Poland. So you have a Russian-Polish Jew on the left and a Russian-Polish Laos on the right. And it's basically making the comparison. So we've gone through all these postcards. So what's the solution? So now the postcards, they present what they don't like and what they think, but then they also provide the solution. And the solution is expulsion. So we're familiar with expulsions from the Middle Ages, but it sort of fell out of favor in the 1700s and 1800s, Enlightenment and the revolutions, all that. The Jews were theoretically supposed to be citizens, all that kind of thing. But that's not what people still were hoping for. They still wanted to get rid of the Jews. So as I'll show you the next group of postcards, what I was thinking is, what were Jews thinking? If you were a Jewish person living in this country and you went to the shop and saw the anti-Semitic postcards and you went to the post office and you saw in the mail all this, what were you thinking? It seems hard to believe that you could have lived a normal life and thought that it was, I don't know. I don't know what people were thinking. So here's what the Polish, this is a postcard from about 1920, and it shows a group of Jews being basically expelled and said, go to France. You can see the Eiffel Tower. expulsion. This is from Austria. So you can see Vienna. You can see the sign of Vienna on the upper left. And the Jews are being kicked out. Get out of here. This is a postcard of what the fantasy, what, and this is about 40 years before the Holocaust. And this one's a quote, good one. This is from Hungary. This is a long line of Jews being expelled from Hungary. And on the top in Hungarian, it says, 100 Jews in a row, deportation. Nathan goes in the front, bundles on their backs, by Luger father, which refers to Karl Luger, the anti-Semitic mayor of Vienna. And then what's even more stunning is that there's a message on the top in Hungarian that says, August 14th, 1901, many heartfelt greetings from us, from all of us. So again, this wasn't, it just wasn't really seen as anything unusual to basically show an image of deportation. And this is from 1901. So if you were a Jew living in Hungary in 1901, what were you doing? What were you thinking? This one's from Germany. So the figure on the left is sort of a mythical German figure. You can see him holding a sword. And you can, all the images on the right are of Jews. If you look closely, you can see very clearly that they're Jews. And it's basically tell them leave. And then the answer is, the question is, where to? Where should they leave to? And there's a little sign on the far right. I don't know if you can see it. I blew it up for you. To Palestine. So the German postcards from 1900, in many cases, were get out of here, go to Palestine. And then I was, you know, Helen Thomas, I don't know if you remember, she said that the Jews should get the hell out of Palestine and go back home to Poland and Germany. So I don't think she saw this postcard. This one is a very, it's also interesting, I'll explain this one. So this is another postcard from Germany. The headline is called The Future. And it shows a group of German soldiers kicking out Jews. And again, you can see it says to Palestine. Now look at the lower left. So someone who owned this postcard before I did, who lived in Israel, bought a stamp from in 1950 in Israel of Chaim Weizmann, stuck it to the front of the postcard, went to the post office, and got it stamped Tel Aviv Yafo. So, sort of, you know, screw you, I'm here. So now I have the postcard. So coming near the end, one thing also important to point out is that children were fair game. That was another thing that I noticed. There was no hesitation to show children or to show them being abused, kicked out, in distress, whatever it was, it didn't matter. So these are just some pictures I pulled out of just children. So that was also pretty stunning. Then a little bit in the book, it's not really the thesis. The thesis is really the precursor to the Holocaust and how it all foreshadowed these postcards 50 years before. I do talk a little bit about some of the anti-Israel postcards. And one postcard in particular, which I'll show you right after this slide, part of the anti-Israel is the libel that the Jews are destroying the mosques, they're destroying this, they're destroying that. It kind of keeps happening. And it's not new. I'll show you this postcard. This postcard was published in Great Britain in 1949, right after Israel became independent. And it says, lest we forget, Zionist mutilation of the holy places. And it shows a picture of the old city, basically accusing the Jews of destroying holy places. But these places are actually still standing. The tower on the left is the German Lutheran Church. So this idea that Jews destroy holy places started a long time ago.
There's a cross on the ground.
Right, a broken cross, yeah. And I touch a little bit about the book. I won't read all this about Muslim anti-Semitism. And, you know, I think the sad reality is that today it's as casual and ingrained in day-to-day thinking as it was in Europe in 1900. The only difference is there are no Jews in those countries. So it's hard to believe, but... I have a few modern postcards in the book. This is a postcard from Iraq in the 1980s. And, you know, as most of you know, they sort of co-opted the Nazi imagery and applied it to Jews, and it's reflected in the postcards. You know, part of what I did with the book is really tie it to a little bit of what we see today, especially in Europe, you know, anti-Semitism. Was, you know, as I was researching, and I'm sure many of you know, the unpleasant truth is that anti-Semitism in Europe seems to be alive and flourishing. There was just a new book called Demonizing Israel and the Jews that has this survey conclusion that 40% of adults in Europe have anti-Israel Jews, and it really means anti-Jewish views. And it wasn't just a Muslim problem. It was a general population. You know, one thing, there's a city in Sweden, Malmo, Sweden, where there was... The Wiesenthal Center urged extreme caution for Jewish travelers going to the city in an enlightened country in Europe. So when I see these postcards, we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, these postcards really comprise thinking that was developed over centuries, maybe 1,000 years of ingrained cultural thinking, where mama could send a postcard to her daughter of anti-Semitic image and it doesn't really raise an eyebrow even a little bit. So it's just not going to go away just 50 years after the Holocaust. And not to be all negative, a lot of the leaders, Germany is a good friend of Israel, so there's a lot of positives. I know I'm being all negative. And then we look at these are things that have been issued in newspapers. Some of you might have seen these in 2013. This is from a German newspaper talking about how Israel is, I won't go into detail, but you can see how this Jewish person, how Israel was portrayed, sort of the same imagery as the postcards. This one you might have seen in the British newspaper of Netanyahu, you know, bloody knife and killing Palestinians. This one was from the Belgian Education Ministry. Had a training exercise for teachers. Teachers were asked to analyze the cartoon, and they were given the choice with one of three statements. This is a Palestinian fleeing Jews. Jews want the entire area of Palestine back, or Jews call Palestine Israel. So I'm going to leave you with one last image. Some of you might have seen this. So I found this very interesting as I was doing my research, because the Native American Indians, there's some group that's been complaining for a long time that the teams, the Redskins and the Indians, the Braves, are racist. So what they did is this group, and this is about a month ago, they put these pictures and they showed an image of the Cleveland Indians baseball cap showing this sort of smiling caricature of an Indian on the right. And then they did the same kind of image and they said, you know, this is the New York Jews baseball team and the San Francisco Chinamen baseball team. And when I saw this, I'm like, you know what, they really have a good point. So it just seems to me that our own, we don't really think about it, but it's kind of a little bit of an ingrained racism where we don't, where the Cleveland Indians is just this sort of, you know, funny image of a smiling Indian that they really hate. So I leave you with that. Any questions?
Did the message ever reflect what the picture was showing?
1 out of 20 times. There were a few times. There were actually a few postcards from. There were anti-Semitic conventions, literally. So there was like a convention in Germany of an anti-Semitic group, and there they would send anti-Semitic postcards from that convention, and they would talk about the postcard. Almost never, 1 out of 20. Which is why it didn't call anyone's attention. It wasn't different than sending any other postcard.
Were there many publishers was always the same publisher, or were there different publishers?
Hundreds. And there were a lot of the publishers published postcards of every kind. So there wasn't really just a publisher that just made anti-Semitic postcards. Most of the publishers published thousands of postcards of every kind of theme, and they were in business, so they published the postcards that they knew people were going to buy. The businesses weren't really ideological. The businesses were profit motivated, but they knew people were going to buy them, so they made them.
Where do you buy the postcards?
So they're, like anything else, there's a little niche. They're Judaica dealers who deal with old Judaica papers and documents and books. So that's a big. There's some dealerships and the same auctions in Israel, who deal with this same kind of thing. And then there's good old eBay, and just people who have them and sell them.
Have you found anywhere? It's obvious that a Jew is sending it to another Jew. Like some of them more less you know, some that are a little bit more benign.
Never. Never. It's possible. There might. No, not really. Not really. The answer is no. Thinking about it.
When did you start collecting this topic? How many postcards do you think you have in your collection?
About, I don't know, 12, 15 years ago. And I would say 500 or 600.
Wow.
Different ones. So. There's some that are very common that I could buy 100 of the same one, just to show the volume of them. There are others that are rare.
Like which ones are the most popular?
There's no way to sort of classify which ones. You don't know which one will be the most popular.
In the process of weeding out the postcards that you wanted for your collection, what other types of racism or ethnic derision did you find in postcards?
It's a good question. And I didn't really pursue postcards of other ethnic racism. Mm-hmm. But you could certainly, I have seen many, and I could put a whole book for blacks for sure. Mm-hmm. No problem. And Asia men, that's sort of the term. And then you had a lot of colonial, so you have a lot of the French in Africa or the Germans in Africa. You could find how they portrayed Africans at the time and Asians at the time. So, but you know what? In all everything I've seen, I never saw anything that was an image of expulsion. That I never saw.
I have a postcard that dates back to the 1920s. It was sent to me. It's a wagon with three Negroes in it, and the inscription on it says, "How would you like a box of chocolate?" At that time, it didn't mean anything.
Right.
But now, thinking about it, this is racist to the nth degree.
Interesting.
Were there any anti-Semitic stamps on any of these postcards?
No. I'd say the governments didn't publish or print anything. Maybe Nazi Germany did, but there were no stamps that were anti-Semitic. Today there are from the Muslim world, plenty of them, but no stamps. Why are you asking a question?
Yes. Two questions. One, do you have a favorite, I guess, first poem? Two, just out of curiosity, I don't have, you know, my eBay, you know, I don't have
yeah.
a computer here. About how much do they work?
Yeah. The postcards, the common postcards can range anywhere from $10 to $50 each. And then there's probably a subset that are much a smaller range, maybe 50 to 100. And then really only a handful, a few dozen, maybe more than $100. There's one postcard that I wanted to buy. It was a real post photo image of the lynching of Leo Frank. It was there were photographs of it, and they converted photographs to postcards, and there were about two dozen of them available, and I bid on it in an auction. It went for more than $1,000, which is above what I bid on it. But there are a few rare ones. There are a few images of pogroms, like live aftermaths of pogroms from Russia. Those are very rare, one of a kind maybe.
Is there like a small community of folks? Because most professions or hobbies have like a small community of folks. Do you know who's your competitor? Do you know who you're?
Not really. There was one guy in Israel who, when we were there for a few months, I actually got to know, and he was a dealer in photographic images. And I actually, he invited me to his house, and he had a collection, but not really. And I don't have really time, you know, so I kind of do it at home. And
in the postcards that have pictures, are there any identifications of who the photographers were?
No, the photographers are almost never identified. They were just for hire. And they gave up their rights. They were hired by the postcard companies to take pictures, and then they handed them over for hire. There are a few instances of artist ones, and I've tracked down a few of the artists who were there who are not known for anti-Semitic art, and it's in the book. There's one sculptor that's pretty well known, a German sculptor, who actually did this on the side for postcards. He drew images, and he signed his name to it. So,
today, are postcards being used to spread hate, especially coming out of Europe?
I don't think so. I think the hatred in Europe, I think it's more subtle now. I think if you send an anti-Semitic postcard, people are going to say that you're doing something wrong. So it's more subtle now. It's more hidden and anti-Israel, and it's sort of I don't think that no one's publishing anti-Semitic postcards in Europe. I think the only place in the world that they're now publishing anti-Semitic postcards is the Muslim world. Any other questions?
Isn't there another book on anti-Semitic postcards, a much smaller book of a later period, but fairly recent?
There are some books of anti-Semitic images and cartoons in media, of later images, but not picture postcards. As I said, there's a French small volume, and there was an exhibit in Germany maybe 20 years ago, and the museum put a book out on the postcards. That's it. There's nothing in English like this.
I don't know if you're familiar with it or you collected. There was a lot of script that was issued in the early 20s in Germany during hyperinflation, and they couldn't give out change. The stores and communities gave out script, and they often were very anti-Semitic.
I've seen those. I have a couple of them that kind of came with collections that I know what you're talking about. Same idea. No surprise.
Yeah, I'm curious why you stopped collecting up to 1920. I understand the golden age of postcards, but wouldn't you find it interesting to see, especially in Germany, the anti-Semitic postcards leading up to the war, like in the 30s, for instance?
There are two parts to the answer. One, there just weren't as many postcards made, especially after the war. The war was devastating, so all the publishing houses were closed. So you had this period, especially in Germany, for maybe 10 years, that the last thing they were thinking about was using paper to publish postcards. So there really aren't that many. And I do have Holocaust postcards, and German postcards, Nazi postcards. They're in the book, but to me they're not that interesting because telling you, oh, the Nazis made anti-Semitic postcards, it's not surprising. It doesn't really, it's like, so what? Any other questions?
It's just occurred to me, since the rise of the postcards, times a lot of these were published seem to be around the same time as the beginning of the Zionist movement. But there any awareness within that, within the community?
It's a good question. I mean, I think the Zionist movement emerged because people knew there was anti-Semitism in a sense and wanted to get the hell out of there. So this, thankfully there was a small group that, you know, thought ahead. But I don't know, it's a good question. I asked myself I wish I could ask someone who lived in 1909, who was an adult, and say, what do you think about these postcards? Like, what? How do you feel about this? Like, what's going on? I wish I could do that. All right, thanks a lot.
Refreshments to be shared. Thank you for coming.
I think I like it. I sort of saw about the shop. Thank you.
Yes, it's definitely a lot more. Well, it's more perfectly done, and Frank's images are, you know, it's more in, you know, it's a topic you want to look at. Thank you. All right.
Sometimes I'll switch it up in my kitchen. But my granddaughter, they have this place right on job.
Thank you. This is his big scheme, right?
A lot of them are children.
We should start collecting anti-Semitic. What's funny is what he said about collecting. He's right. Since he was a kid, he collected everything.
Yeah, I want someone.
I feel like I'd be like hanging out with friends. You know. But I want to. Like, you know,
Right.
Go on here. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, which is sort of an odd combination, but there's one who runs a petty chain. It's a little Chinese mom, he has to have all the Jewish family.
But I certainly don't
know. I was like, yeah, if you're always a
Hi, Jen.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
Good.
Our mascot for
Thank you.